daring for us to move somewhere else, but people from other countries uproot their entire families all the time, relocate to the United States, and manage to figure it out. You have a good point. I have never thought of it that way. A lot of them even leave everyone else behind to come here and try to make things work. Yes, they do. Many never see their family members again. You know, I couldn't imagine being a mother in a war-torn country and letting my children be smuggled out to have a better chance at life. I would like to think that I would let them go, but it is unthinkable to me. We really need to appreciate the United States, as messed up as so many things are here. I giggled. A patriotic conversation, and it's not the 4th of July. Tevin wiped his chin with his napkin. Even that seems sensual to me. You're going to fuck him tonight, and you know it, I thought. I will say this, I added. This has given me some food for thought. A lot of my students have been offered opportunities to study abroad or stay with foreign families. I've never been too thrilled about the concept. But when you get right down to it, it's dangerous here in the States. Yes, there have been a lot of school shootings lately. It's crazy. I took a deep breath. Tell me about it. We've had to rethink our security and take more precautions. There's no way to tell when or where someone might lose it. I guess when it's your time, it's your time. Tevin looked into my eyes and grinned. Okay, enough of the dismal stuff. This is our time to get to know each other. Indeed. What else would you like to talk about? I shrugged. How about we discuss why you're so bitter toward men? Didn't you just say enough of the dismal stuff? I got up from the table to throw my plate in the trash bag we had near the grill. So this makes sense to you? Taking me away from the hustle and bustle of the city to a peaceful, secluded place, only to turn around and ask me to conjure up all the negativity that I'm attempting to leave behind? Now that you put it like that, no, it makes no sense at all. I felt his presence behind me a second before he put his arms around my waist and whispered in my ear. But in order for me to avoid the same mistakes the other men made, I need to know what you expect. It's not really all about expectations. It's about human decency and not trying to cause the next person to self-destruct. He gazed into my eyes. That definitely was not my intention. He kissed me on the cheek and let me go. Instead of getting into everything from your past in minute details, how about an overview? He sat down on the bench of the picnic table, facing outward toward me. I can make some assumptions based on that poem you recited. What kind of assumptions? Well, I can assume that you've been cheated on, yelled at before, possibly beaten on. I glared at him, trying to decide how to respond. Okay, I am going to give you a quick overview. Yes, all of those things have happened to me before, including the domestic violence. I always told myself that no man would ever hit me and get away with it, until it actually happened. I walked over and sat down beside Tevin. I was engaged once. It turned out to be a nightmare. His name was Wesley, and I thought he was the moon, the sun, and the stars when I first met him. We met in grad school at Georgetown. He was from what they call old money, originally from Boston. I loved everything about him, from the way he walked with such confidence to his authentic Boston accent. He was just cool. He was charming, brilliant, and said all the right things. Most of the women on campus wanted to at least sleep with him once, and I was no exception. Crazy, but the truth. Like a lot of younger women, I believed that my pussy was better than anyone else's, and after he got one taste of it, he would be mine forever. I actually competed for his attention. I can laugh about it now, but it was ridiculous back then. It's amazing what people can accept as normalcy when toxic situations are all that they have ever witnessed. Looking back at it now, I'm not sure if I ever had any relatives or friends growing up that did not live in complete dysfunction. So if you only comprehend that type of behavior, something better is damn near impossible to relate to. I understand where you are coming from. I've run across quite a few women who felt like I was too good to be true because I wasn't hitting them, cheating on them, or yelling at them like they expected. It's true that good men usually finish last. It took me a long time to realize that. When I would meet a seemingly nice man, I always expected something crazy to happen. Most of the time, it did. But now that I look back on it, I realize that I kept hooking up with guys similar to Wesley over and over again. Men who looked great on paper, men who women would fall all over each other to get to, men who could never actually do right by another human being because it wasn't in their nature. Then I started believing that all men had to have some kind of crazy mentality about them. I was attracting the wrong type of men because I was wearing my pain, low self-esteem, and negative outlook on my face. Tevin glanced over at me and took my hand. I know that extremely well. I felt ashamed because he was right. It was the expression written all over my face the night we met, not to mention the bitter poem. So why even approach me? Why even ask me out if you saw all of that? Because I wanted to be the one to change your outlook. Color me stupid, but I believe it's actually working. Somewhat. I blushed. Yes, it is. We shared a long kiss, and I was ready to let him take me right there on the deck, but I stopped him. I have to warn you about something, I said.
Warn me? You're not really a man, are you?
I slapped him on the thigh, and we both laughed. Now that would truly turn this situationship into an adventure, I replied. No, I'm not a man.
I was just kidding. You're way too beautiful to be a male.
Please, there are some trannies that will put every woman that I know, including me, to shame.
Not a topic that I'm interested in, but I'll take your word for it.
His comment made me concerned, so I asked, "You're not homophobic, are you?"
Absolutely not. Everyone should do them. I'm just not interested in the lifestyle of transsexuals. Nothing against them, though.
Good, because Winsome is bisexual.
Your roommate?
Yes. Tevin had met Winsome when he came to pick me up. It was not going to go down any other way. Winsome had made it a point that if she did not finally meet him, she would give me hell when I got back.
Tevin shrugged. Cool with me. So she's involved with both a man and a woman?
I giggled. I wouldn't say involved. I would say she is simply doing her. She's more scared of putting her heart on the line than I am, but her issues are different.
Like what?
A lot of men get excited about her being bisexual because she can help them live out their fantasies. A lot of women don't trust her because they think she'll go chase after dick behind their backs. The truth is that being bisexual doesn't automatically mean that you'll always want to have your cake and eat it too. It means that you find something attractive and exciting about both.
Got you.
He paused and licked his lips.
Wait, whoa, back up. What exactly is a situationship?
It's a word that I use to describe what I usually end up in. A situationship is like a relationship, but one where there is so much outside bullshit, so many emotional hang-ups, and so much that will inevitably go wrong that it ends up being a hot mess.
Are you saying you still expect something to go wrong with us?
I sure hope not. We stared at each other for a few seconds. He was probably trying to see if I was going to shut down on him suddenly after he had made so much leeway with me. I was going to try my best not to do that. I wanted him, and not only in a sexual way,
but I was still scared half to death to get my feelings hurt again.
It's getting chilly. Let's go inside.
Tevin took my hand and led me inside.
Chapter 10.
Love is when you look into someone's eyes and see everything you need. Unknown. Later that night, we had both showered in separate bathrooms and met back up in the living room of the yurt. Tevin had put our bags in different rooms to let me know that there was no pressure to sleep together. He had no idea that fucking him was definitely on my itinerary for the weekend. "Don't you look cute?" I teased, talking about his flannel pajamas. I had on a black two-piece set that showed a little bit of boobies and accentuated my ass.
"I didn't want to come out here like I usually sleep," he said.
"And how was that?"
"Completely nude."
I giggled as I sat Indian style beside him on the sofa.
"Ah, so you're a 10%er.
"What's a 10%er?
"That's the percentage of people globally who tend to sleep naked.
"You and your encyclopedia head. I like the fact that you're a thinker. Not every woman can stimulate me intellectually."
"Oh, I plan to stimulate you all right," I thought.
"I still need to warn you."
"Oh, yeah," he said. "I forgot about the warning you wanted to issue to me earlier."
"I hope you don't take any of this the wrong way."
"One way to find out. Issue the warning and let me decide how I take it."
I got up off the sofa and went over to the TV that had an iPod dock attached to it. My iPod was already there, charging. "I need some theme music."
"Theme music?" I could hear Tevin chuckling. "To talk to me?"
"Yes. Haven't you ever noticed that there's usually at least one song that explains and expresses what you're thinking at any given moment in time?"
"Never really thought of it like that, but it makes sense. So what's your theme song for this moment in time?"
"Things Don't Exist" by Goapele. Ever heard it?
"No, never. What's it about?"
"Just listen to it, and then I'll pour my heart out to you afterwards."
"Pour your heart out. Maybe I should pour some wine."
We both laughed nervously as the song started. It seemed silly, but I really wanted him to be able to relate to how I was feeling. "Things Don't Exist" summed it up perfectly. Tevin sat there and listened to the nearly 5-minute song that described a woman who was blue and who admitted that she was her own worst enemy. She sang about how when she looked into her current man's eyes, she saw a love that she had never known, and about how things still existed in her heart that she hoped to get rid of so she could embrace love.
"Deep song," Tevin said after it ended. "Let me analyze it, even though I am not a Virgo." I giggled.
"No one ever said that only Virgos can analyze things, only that we tend to go overboard sometimes."
"Sometimes."
"Okay, all the time." I rubbed Tevin's cheek tenderly. "I wanted you to hear that song because it truly does sum up the woman that I am, in this moment, here with you. I see something in the way that you look at me that I actually do believe is real. But I'm broken. I'm broken and hurt, and as much as I wish that I wasn't, it's the truth. I'm not sure why you made the decision to even try to establish anything real with me. I'm a good woman and I know it, but I've always been a good woman. I was a good woman when Wesley decided to commit to me over all the others, and I was also a good woman when he cheated on me, gave me chlamydia, got me pregnant, and put a pillowcase over my head and beat me half to death. I decided to abort the child without him ever knowing. Don't judge me for that, please." Tevin took me into his arms.
"Oh, baby, I'm so sorry."
The dummy actually believed that using a pillowcase wouldn't leave any bruises. Can you believe that? He actually told that to the police at the emergency room when they came to arrest him. Like using a pillowcase should get him a pass for putting his hands on me.
I wish that I could get my hands on that motherfucker. I'd kill him.
I could tell that Tevin was serious. It was a pleasant thought, but not a realistic one.
Trust me, I considered killing him myself, but that would have allowed him to take everything from me, including my freedom. He damaged me enough. I call what Wesley did to me my initial hit and run. Then other men came along, saw me as a wounded deer in the middle of the road, and ran over me again. Used me for sex, used me for money, used me as a punching bag. Then it became normal. It is what I came to expect. I started wondering if the way that romance and love were portrayed in books and movies from the past was all a myth. If you look at the current novels and theatrical releases, the romantic comedies and love stories, they all make it seem like two people can meet, fall in love, and live happily ever after. Yet, most of my friends are struggling to even find a man to fuck that isn't already doing another one of our friends.
I take it that it's been a while since you've been with someone, Chemistry, and I want you to know that I don't want to rush you.
He sighed.
No. Let me rephrase that. I don't want you to think that you're obligated to do anything with me. Of course, I'd love to make love to you, but that has to be what you truly want.
I know that you would never force me to do something with you, Tevin. And the fact of the matter is that I've changed to some degree. I made a promise to myself that I would never allow another man to hurt me ever again. He might get one shot in, but after the first red flag, it's over. I wouldn't be here with you if I thought you were capable of intentionally hurting me. Yet, in the back of my mind, I don't put anything past anyone.
Well, I appreciate your somewhat faith in me. I'm willing to prove what type of man I am, and it's going to take time and consistency. I get that. You can trust me. I would never lie to you. Anything you ask me, I'll be truthful. That's the only way this could ever work. We have to tell each other the truth about everything.
I sat there thinking about what he had just said.
Then I need to tell you something, I said.
What's that?
When I met you, I was sexually active with two different men.
I felt Tevin clench up a little. I'm sure he never expected that, and I damn sure knew that I couldn't tell him that I had fucked Anthony right before I met him for dinner. I did feel it was imperative for me to come clean. Secrets tended to show up in the most unexpected places, and DC was so small, there was a good possibility that Tevin and I would run into either Anthony or Gregory at some point. For all I knew, he actually could have been acquaintances with one of them, considering the fact that all I ever wanted in regards to them was their dicks.
Let me explain. I was having sex with them, but I wasn't emotionally connected to either. And that was on purpose. Even though both of them wanted to pursue something more, I refused. Having sex with them was a way of taking care of my needs and proving that I could exercise some type of control over my emotions. There was a time when my vagina was directly connected to my heart. If you didn't have my heart, then you couldn't even think about touching my pussy. But then, after each failed relationship, I became more and more disillusioned when it came to loving a man or being loved by one. I even considered becoming a lesbian, but I'm not attracted to women. And from seeing Winsome go through the drama with chick after chick, that's definitely not the answer. So, I wanted to be touched. I wanted to touch back. Tevin rubbed his hands on his thighs uncomfortably.
I'm only telling you this because you expect honesty, and that's fair. I stopped sleeping with both of them after our first official date at Ocean Air. I blocked their numbers and haven't contacted them since.
That's kind of cold, isn't it? Tevin asked.
I don't see it that way. Both of them understood that there was nothing there, and that eventually it would come to an end. I met you and I felt guilty about them. Crazy, but true. We just met and I already felt some kind of obligation to you.
And why do you think that is? He asked.
I shrugged. Fate, maybe.
The feeling that everything that I had ever been through and endured might have brought me to you.
The fact that even though you watched me spew out all of that venom, you still asked me out.
The chemistry I felt with you the second we laid eyes on each other. Part of me felt like it died a long time ago, but there was another part of me that was still alive. I kissed Tevin lightly on the lips.
I want to try. I want to try to make this work, whatever this is. As much as I am flattered about being the woman that you want, it's more important for me to be the woman that you need, in all ways.
You are the woman that I need, Chemistry.
I want to be, but you're going to have to be patient with me if we take this further. And I don't mean waiting for sex. I want to make love to you. Tonight. But once we get into this, I don't want you to feel slighted or angry with me when I voice my insecurities or shut down from time to time while I try to climb onto the next plateau. It took a couple of decades to turn me into this mess. The cleanup is not going to happen overnight.
I understand everything that you're saying, and I'm prepared. I'll do whatever it takes to make you happy so that I can be happy.
I eyed him seductively. So, why don't you take me to bed so we can discover our happiness?
Chapter 11. Love is of all the passions the strongest, for it attacks simultaneously the head, the heart, and the senses. Lao Tzu.
Are you sure about this? Tevin asked as he laid me down on the king-size bed after carrying me into the bedroom where my luggage was located. I can wait.
Wait for what? I responded.
I stood up on my knees and started unbuttoning the flannel pajama top. Wait for global warming to end the world, which could happen tomorrow. Wait for one of us to come up with an excuse not to do it. We came up here to be alone, and we are. Our cell phones are off. You're not on call. So all we have between us is space. I licked a trail down the middle of his chest. And opportunity. I pulled his top down over his massive, muscular shoulders and then let it fall to the floor. Then I pulled my own over my head and tossed it beside his. I started unfastening my bra.
I want you, Tevin. I want you to devour me, partake of everything that I have to give. I want you to make all of my pain go away, all of my fears. I want you to make me forget my past. I want you to make me even more excited about the future than I am already.
I let my breast fall out of my bra and then tossed it over his shoulder.
I grabbed each one of my breasts in a hand and then lifted my left one and licked it with the tip of my tongue. Tevin remained silent, taking in my every move and my every word.
I want you to suck my breasts as though you've never done it before, like you've been waiting since forever to do this, like a teenaged boy waiting for his first time getting lucky. I stood up completely on the bed and unfastened the string on my pants, then let them fall so Tevin could see my black lace thong.
I want you to rip my panties off with your teeth. And then eat my pussy like it is the sustenance you need in order to wake up in the morning. And then I want you to feed me your dick so I can wake up with a smile on my face in the morning.
Tevin grinned.
What?
I asked.
Nothing. I just feel so blessed right now. Even though I'm crazy about you and I love you, I never expected you to be so freaky in the bedroom.
We haven't done anything yet.
He grabbed one of my ass cheeks in each hand and pulled me closer to him.
Exactly, and my dick is already hard enough to split bricks. Everything about you is turning me on. Keep looking at me like that and talking dirty to me. What do you want me to do after I feed you this dick?
Well, after I hum out several tunes on your mic, I want you to stick it in me and fuck me until I come all over it.
He grinned from ear to ear and then set my ass free. Let me go get my condoms out the next room, he said, and started to turn away.
We've both been tested. I had delivered my speech to Tevin a couple of weeks earlier, and he had agreed to be tested.
I was tested as well. We were both clean.
I could tell that he seemed a bit apprehensive, so I wanted to clarify that he was the exception.
I don't want you to get the wrong idea, Tevin. I did use condoms with the others, who shall remain nameless. If we are going to be together, I want us to be together. I want to taste you, and I want you to taste me. I want you to be able to lick your breakfast and taste all of this good, good.
I let go of my breasts and reached my right hand down into my thong while I was grabbing Tevin by the back of his neck, drawing his face closer to me and starting to kiss him. I played in my pussy for a moment. It was hotter than the flames of hell. Then I took my two damp fingers and put them in between our mouths so we could both suck on them together.
You like that? I asked, breathing directly into Tevin's mouth.
He mumbled. I love it. I lay down on the bed and reached for him to get on top of me.
Kiss me again.
Tevin didn't hesitate a second, and he was on me, tonguing me down and grinding his dick between my legs. We continued the kiss until I felt I was about to scream. I had to come up for air. No one had ever kissed me like that before. Ever.
Damn, I whispered. I can tell you have a humongous dick, even through your pants.
Want to see it? He asked, and then grinned.
I want to see it, touch it, lick it, suck it, and then fuck it.
Tevin stood up and took off his pants. He had no underwear on, and what popped out damn near made me jump off the bed. He indeed had a huge dick. 10 inches minimum, and the girth was outlandish. He sensed my apprehension.
I hope you don't run from this. I probably should have brought this up before, but I didn't want to disrespect you by talking about my size.
I'm not going anywhere, but I can't imagine that it has been an issue with some women.
He chuckled. Somewhat.
I sat up on the edge of the bed and pulled him toward me by his hips.
Since I plan on being the last woman who ever does this to you, it should no longer be an issue.
I took his dick in my right hand, directed the head to my mouth, and started sucking on the head.
You taste so good.
Tevin started moaning while I took him in and out of my mouth, more and more each time until I caught a rhythm. Then I started picking up the speed and giving him a hand job on the part of his dick closer to his scrotum. I used my other hand to caress his testicles.
Damn, baby. That feels so good, he whispered.
I let his dick go and then lay down on my back, turning my head so that it was dangling off the bed.
Come here, I said, then choked. But don't come too quick.
I opened my mouth and allowed him to place his dick back in it and move it in and out. It allowed my throat to open up more, and also let him see my tits bouncing up and down as he watched the way that I was playing in my pussy. I had to take frequent breaths, and each time that I did, I used my tongue to lick and suck on his balls from underneath.
Oh, shit, he exclaimed about 5 minutes later, before he exploded inside my mouth.
I let every single drop go down my throat, then turned over and sucked on him gently, admiring and worshiping his dick. My new best friend.
My turn. I want to taste your pussy, Tevin said,
still trying to catch his breath. I sat up, pulled him down on the bed, put a pillow under his head, and then yanked my thong off.
I thought you wanted me to rip those off with my teeth.
There's always next time, I giggled. Right now, I'm about to feed you dessert.
I climbed on top of his face, leaned back, and placed my hands on each side of his thighs. Then I started riding his tongue like I was in a cunnilingus rodeo. He grabbed the front of my legs and started eating me like I was his last feast. It was some amazing shit. His tongue was at least half as long as his dick. He made me come all over his tongue within minutes. I fell off of him.
I need a break.
He chuckled. No breaks.
I don't think I've ever come so hard, I exclaimed.
You'd better get used to it then.
He lay beside me and we cuddled so that our chests were touching and we could gaze into each other's eyes.
I'm planning on making love to you as much as possible, and I haven't actually even done it yet.
All of it is a part of making love, I replied, playing with his hairless chest.
Yeah, but here comes the good part. Oh my.
That was all that I got out before he was inside of me.
Oh, chemistry, he whispered right after he entered me. I was trying to deal with the initial pain of his dick being so big.
You feel so good.
Now, I will say this. In my lifetime, I had only been rendered speechless by one other dick. I had screwed this guy back in college off the cuff one night, and he put it on me so bad that I couldn't even find the words. Tevin was the second man to render me speechless when he started slowly grinding his dick into me. I spread my legs into a wide V because it was all that I could think of to try to give him the most access possible. He started going deeper and deeper, and I was moaning like crazy, but could find no words. And I was considered a shit talker in the bedroom. Not that night. It seemed like Tevin fucked me for hours. It was really more like 30 minutes, but it was like being in heaven. Getting that first nut out when I sucked his dick made Tevin last a long ass time. I planned to keep that in mind in the future, saving the oral until after so he would come faster. When he finally came, he looked like he was having a seizure. He clenched his face up and let his head fall down by my right thigh. He then looked up in my eyes, said, "I love you, chemistry," and then climbed off of me. When he went into the bathroom to clean up and get me a towel, I laid there someplace between bliss and wondering if I could actually make a relationship work for once in my life. I wasn't prepared to consider it love yet, but it was definitely something worth exploring further.
Tevin. Chapter 12. The art of love is largely the art of persistence. Albert Ellis. 2 months later. It was a rainy day in May, and the traffic was ridiculous as I tried to get to work. Sibley Memorial was in a quiet area, but getting into the vicinity meant driving through downtown D.C. from my house near Rock Creek Park. People in D.C. started panicking and driving crazy when it rained badly. During the winter, snow created absolute havoc. Whenever there were several days of bad weather, I would stay at the hospital, like many of the other staff. Being a doctor meant going into work when I was supposed to be there. When I didn't show up, someone could literally die. I had a scheduled surgery that morning. A 78-year-old woman had vascular dementia. She was already suffering from Alzheimer's when she had a stroke that ended up blocking the blood flow to her brain. I planned to go in and clear out the blockage from her veins and hopefully improve her ability to function. When I first became a doctor, I had it embedded in my mind that I could save anyone's life. Becoming a vascular surgeon made all the sense in the world to me. Growing up, my father would always seem so prideful when he would sit at the dinner table and tell us all how he had prevented yet another person from dying. In our presence, he never mentioned the ones who didn't make it, although I am sure he did to my mother. I could appreciate him wanting to shield us from the fact that we were all dying. It is only a matter of the hour and the day. Even when I did realize that inadequate blood flow could damage and eventually kill cells anywhere in the body, I was still inspired to try to allow as many people as possible some additional time. If it ended up being 10 more years, 10 more days, or even 10 more hours, it all counted. Watching people deal with sickness and death still bothered me, even though I paid witness to it daily. Delivering the news of death was the worst, even though I never made promises that I could not keep. I was always honest about the complications that might arise, the percentage of people who survived certain things. I understood the importance of being realistic. Still, Mrs. Sparrow Turner had touched my heart when I met her, and I prayed that she would survive the surgery. She was a sweet older woman, a widow who had been married for more than 40 years before her husband dropped dead of a heart attack a few years prior. She had 4 children, 11 grandchildren, and 2 great-grandchildren. It always made it harder when people came from larger families. The waiting room would be packed with people pacing the floor or clinging to one another, and sometimes a relative or two actually had to be admitted for observation because the stress would overwhelm them. I will never forget one time when a woman was visiting her husband, who was on life support, after a repair of his abdominal aortic aneurysm. He had been without oxygen for a long time. She was so distraught when I told her that we were checking to see if he was brain dead, and advised her to start considering removing him from the machine, that on the way to the elevator, she fell out. She ended up dying from an undiagnosed brain tumor, and he ended up recovering. Having to tell him about his wife's death was one of the hardest things I ever had to do in my entire life. Being a doctor had truly humbled me as a person. A lot of my colleagues were arrogant and often made mistakes because of their egos and not wanting to be team players. I was the type who loved to consult with others to get the benefit of their expertise. I realized that different people viewed things in different ways. Being confident was one thing. Thinking you were God was quite another. After all, that job was already taken. As I pulled into the parking garage in my white E63 AMG Benz, I noticed Katrina Maxwell getting out of her Ford Mustang. She waved and then waited for me to park and get out. Katrina was cool, but she was overstepping being professional to try to get me into bed. It was not about to happen. I loved gemistry, and as I had promised, I would never do anything to hurt or disrespect her. "Hey, you," Katrina said as I walked up beside her. "Don't you look sexy this morning? Then again, you always look appetizing to me." "Good morning, Katrina." We walked toward the elevator together. I tried not to seem irritated by her, but it wasn't easy. Once we got on, she tried to step closer to me. "I've got tickets to see Kem at Constitution Hall next weekend. You want to go with me?" "No, but thanks for letting me know he's coming to town. I didn't realize that. Gemistry loves Kem. I'll have to try to snag some tickets." Katrina looked disappointed, but she shouldn't have been surprised. In the 6+ years she had been trying to get me to date her, I had never agreed. "Well, I'm sure some man will be happy to have me on his arm for the night." She rolled her eyes. "Even though you think you're too good for me." I glanced down at her. "Katrina, I don't think that I'm too good for you. I simply don't want to date you. We work together. I've been around you enough to be able to gauge whether or not we make sense, and most importantly, I'm already taken. Oh, yeah? I chuckled as the elevator ascended to the fifth floor. Yes, indeed. She's an amazing woman, and I love her. That's the end of it, but I wish you well. Katrina rolled her eyes and sucked her teeth. I'm sick of men turning down all of this. She rubbed her hands over her body. I'm too fine to be single. I agree. You're too fine to be single, and maybe if you let men approach you, you could easily tell who's interested and who's not. Men approach me all damn day, but all they want is sex. I need a provider, someone who wants to be with me and only me. Well, like I said, I really do wish you the best, I said as I started to get off on my floor. She was going up two more floors. I used my hand to hold the elevator open for a few additional seconds. And if for some reason you can't find a date, I'm willing to buy the tickets off you for what you paid for them, plus 20%. As the doors closed, Katrina looked like I had slapped her. 7 hours later, I was sitting in my office, trying to regain my composure. Mrs. Turner had died on the operating table. While I realized that I had done my very best to help her, it wasn't enough. Even with Alzheimer's, she had this amazing spirit about her, and a kindness that was hard to find. My cell rang. It was Gemistry. I answered, "Hey, baby, I miss you." She giggled. "I crawled out of your bed about 4 o'clock this morning. How could you miss me already?" "You left at 4, and by 5 I was ready to bawl my eyes out. I buried my head in my pillow to fight back the tears." "Now you're exaggerating, but I have to admit that I miss you too. So, what are we doing for dinner tonight?" As much as I wanted to see Gemistry, I didn't want to carry my pain from work to her doorstep. "Maybe we can chill tonight. I had a long day." "What's wrong?" "Nothing. Don't lie to me. I can tell when something's wrong with you, baby." "I lost a patient today, and it's hard on me. I wouldn't be good company tonight. I promise you that." "Let me be the judge of that. You're always there to comfort me when I have a hard day at work with all those rugrats I have to deal with. Let me reciprocate." "Sounds tempting." I sat back further in my chair, took off my glasses, and rubbed my eyes. "It's going to be nearly impossible for me to relax or be a good conversationalist."
"We don't have to go out anyplace. How about I come over to your place, cook you a quick dinner, and then we can curl up on the sofa and watch a good movie? You don't have to talk if you don't want to, and I can rub your back, your head, and even your dick for you until you fall asleep. How does that sound?"
I couldn't help but smile. "Well, that sounds very relaxing."
"Exactly." She paused. "Tevin, you have such a kind heart, and I'm sure that you did whatever you could to save your patient."
"I did."
"You tried, and that's all that matters. But our lives must go on. One day, one of us will have to say goodbye to the other. Let's not waste any time."
"I'll be home by 7, I told her. "Use your key."
"Bye, baby."
I hung up and thought about all that had happened since Gemistry and I had become official 2 months earlier. My life had changed in that yurt up in Virginia, and while our sex was what legends were made of, it was more than that. When I first met Gemistry, she was obviously upset with the world, but with men in particular. My common sense told me not to say a word to her, to let her sit there, finish off her martini, and sulk off into the night. But my heart instructed me to say something to her, to pursue her.
There had only been a few times in my life when a woman had appealed to me right off the bat. The last woman who had that effect on me, I married. Estella was like my fantasy woman, fine, smart, attentive, passionate, and on track to become extremely successful. We had only dated less than 6 months before I popped the question. I was convinced that it would be the two of us against the world. We would face every challenge, every obstacle, together, and raise a gaggle of children in a mansion fit for a king. But God had other plans. The first miscarriage made us seemingly closer. The second miscarriage had us wondering what we had done to deserve it. The third miscarriage made us angry, her at me and me at everyone else. I could barely function as a man, much less a doctor, and took a leave of absence to try to pull myself together. Estella went into a shell and completely withdrew from communicating with me, her parents, her co-workers, her friends, and everyone else. I tried for 2 years to bring her smile back, but it never came. Every time she looked at me, all she saw were the children who would never be. She went behind my back and had her tubes tied. I was upset that she had robbed me of the possibility of being a father without my consent. Looking back, I understand why she did it. She never wanted to experience that type of pain again. I was not the one who had carried those fetuses inside of me. I was not the one who'd had to deal with their mangled bodies ejecting out of me. I was not the one who had to feel like a failure because my body could not carry a baby to term. Estella had been through more than I could ever realize until much later. Just as I felt like a failure at the moment for not being able to save Mrs. Turner, despite all of my efforts and doing all of the right things, Estella had felt the same when she could not carry any of our children to term. It had been years since I had spoken to her. But something made me pick up my office phone and dial her number. Remarkably, it was still the same number, and she answered on the third ring. "Hello? This is Tevin Harris." Silence. "I was calling to check on you." "I'm fine. How are you?" "Oh, I'm good." There was yet again an uncomfortable silence between us. "Tevin, I need to get back to work. Unless you needed something?" she finally said. "No, no. I don't need anything." "Well, then, take care and, wait a second, Estella. I do need to get something off my chest." She seemed irritated. "And what's that?" "In all these years, I've never apologized to you." "What would you need to apologize for? We never hated each other. Sometimes two people grow apart. Sometimes there is simply way too much water under the bridge, to the point where the cars on it get flooded. Sometimes life throws us curveballs that we can never catch." "And I agree with everything you said. I do. But now that I've had time to mature, evolve, and think about it all, I realize that I could have been more understanding about what you were going through. I could have been a better man and a better husband." "No, you were a good man then, and I'm sure you're a good man now. I was not mentally prepared to handle the loss of our babies. Not three. It was a pain that I had never imagined to be possible. And you tried to stand there by my side. I pushed you and everyone else away. So, how are you doing now?"
"I'm making it work. I've resigned myself to the fact that I'll never give birth naturally. My fiancé and I are considering adoption, though." I had no idea that Estella was engaged. Then again, there was no reason why I should have been privy to that information. When we broke ties, we also broke ties with mutual friends. She had her circle, and I had mine. "Wow! Congrats on the engagement," I told her. "He's a lucky man."
"Thanks, but I'm the lucky one. He accepted me, flaws and all, and I'm grateful for that."
I could hear her moving around on the other end of the phone.
"Do you have someone special in your life?"
"Yes, I do. It's only been a few months, but I've never felt this way before." I suddenly felt guilty for saying that, even though it was the truth to a great degree.
"I mean, Tevin, you don't have to explain anything to me. I'm glad that you have found love again. Both of us deserve to be happy."
"Yes, we do." "Well, I don't want to keep you. This is my office number if you ever need anything."
"I'll keep that in mind. Thanks for checking on me, Tevin. I'll keep you in my prayers."
"And I'll keep you in mine." We both hung up, and I got up from my desk, took off my white coat, replaced it with my suit jacket, and walked out the door. Life was hard, but it was never meant to be easy. I was determined to make chemistry and me work out. So far, so good. Chapter 13. We waste time looking for the perfect lover, instead of creating the perfect love. Chemistry cooked some chicken and pasta for dinner, popped open a bottle of Moscato, and was making an attempt not to talk too much. I felt bad and flattered at the same time. She was really trying to please me. She had on this purple dress that made her fineness shine bright, and these sexy-ass bone-white pumps. Some women don't get that men are truly turned on by the heels. Hell, I wished women would have kept them on in the bed from time to time. Then again, I enjoyed playing with and sucking on a pretty set of toes. Chemistry had beautiful feet. She was on point from head to toe. We were sitting across from each other at the dining room table in my 5-bedroom home. I didn't need all of that space, but it made sense for me to purchase real estate. I owned 3 other homes in the area, but loved living near the park. During the summer months, I loved riding my bike through the trails, hiking, and playing basketball at pickup games. I thought back to Chemistry bringing all of that gear hiking on the Appalachian Trail in Virginia. It was often hard for her to simply go with the flow. Everything tended to be a production. She was always concerned about having everything she needed to do something. I sat there, chuckling and thinking about it. "What's so funny?" She glanced down at my plate, which was still half full. "I hope you're not laughing at my cooking." "No, it's good. Not as good as what I can throw together, but good." I grinned as she drank a sip of wine with much attitude. "I'm only playing with you, baby. I don't have much of an appetite." "I understand, and I'm sorry for talking so much." "You barely said 2 words to me since you got here."
"Well, that's because I said that I wouldn't. I just want to be here for you when you need me."
I got up from the table, walked over to her, then took both of her hands and stood her up. "And I appreciate that." I started to lead her into the living room.
"Wait, I need to clear the table and do the dishes."
"All of that can wait," I said.
"Let's go pick a movie to watch." "I've got that covered. I brought a Blu-ray with me."
"Oh, yeah? Which one?"
"It's called Dysfunctional Friends. It's about a group of friends that are forced to stay together in the same house after a mutual friend's death. They all agree because his lawyer won't read his will until they do it."
"Ah, so greed makes them deal with one another?"
"Exactamundo. They had all drifted apart because of drama or just being busy in life after college."
"Sounds like my friends."
"Mine, too. I've been thinking about hosting monthly networking events to try to bring my crew back together.
Remember how we used to make fun of our parents for being busy with life? Now we're all stressed out over work. Some are popping out babies and scrapbooking or taking yoga classes. I sat down on the sofa while Gemistry put the movie into my Blu-ray player and grabbed the appropriate remote. She was about to turn it on when I stopped her. If it's okay with you, I'd like to talk about what happened to me at work today.
Of course, baby.
We held hands. I've lost a lot of patience over the years, but something really struck me today about Mrs. Turner's death. Even though I'm well aware of my mortality, I realize that I'm still relatively young. There are things that I still want to do before I leave this earth.
I feel the same way. Life is a one-shot deal. What you make of it, or don't make of it, ultimately becomes your legacy. That's why I'm so determined to make a difference with the kids at Medgar Evers. A lot of them don't have anyone else who believes in them.
I love the fact that you're so passionate about what you do. There are many people who don't have that kind of excitement about their jobs.
Oh, hell, Tevin, most people are only going through the motions to get a paycheck. I see it in the teachers at my school, especially some of the younger ones. They're underpaid, underappreciated, and thought that they would change the world when they started. Then they got a reality check.
Well, the same goes for a lot of doctors, keeping it real.
Don't get me wrong. There are a lot of great teachers, and the rest generally have the potential to achieve greatness. But when you have a few students trying to ruin it for everyone else, it can be a challenge. I try to weed out most of that kind, but a lot of times even the teachers are afraid to tell me what's happening in their classrooms.
A lot of people live in fear these days. The world has become a crazy place. It's not unusual for us to have gunshot victims under the age of 15, or kids coding after using intense drugs.
You and I both have a lot going on. It can be depressing.
Gemistry pushed play on the remote.
Let's chill, watch this, and talk later.
Okay. She propped her back up on some pillows and then pulled me between her legs. I could smell the sweetness of her pussy and feel my dick instantly become hard. I know you said that you were only going to massage me tonight, but baby, I may need to take it a little bit further than that. She giggled.
How much further?
I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. Gemistry started massaging my shoulders, and her hands were magical. She often gave me full-body massages. What I loved about them was that it was obvious that she truly enjoyed doing it. She wasn't doing it for show, or because they talk about all of that in romance novels. She told me once that her love language was physical touch. So I always tried to make sure that I held her hand, hugged her, or spooned with her in bed as much as possible. She said that it made her feel safe, and that she slept better that way.
Yeah, I get your drift, she said, and after this movie, I'm gonna put it on you.
I grinned as the opening credits started.
You'd better.
The movie was cool. Made me think about a lot of things regarding life, past and future. Finally getting some kind of closure with Estella earlier had left me with a sense of relief, even though I never did anything intentionally to harm her, and even though people grieve the loss of children in different ways, I could have treated her better and could have been more understanding. Gemistry had yet to tell me that she loved me, but there was no need for her to ever speak the words if she didn't want to. It was obvious that she loved me. A lot of people say it and act like anything but. My baby girl was there for me, had entrusted me with her heart, and things were going well. She was in the shower about midnight when I joined her. She loved for me to wash her hair, and I enjoyed doing it. She was much shorter than me, and her caramel complexion complemented my deep chocolate one. What I loved most about her were her eyes. They were brown, but they had this sparkle deep inside them that actually made them seem like